USA. Mr. Kiefer?
May it please the court. David Fahrenkamp, the defense attorney for petitioner appellant Ozzie Kratz, had a duty to zealously defend Ozzie from the charges brought against him. We are here today because Mr. Fahrenkamp abandoned that duty and abandoned Ozzie. Instead of investigating the merits of Ozzie's defenses, he merely urged Ozzie to plead guilty so as to quickly dispose of Ozzie's case. Mr. Fahrenkamp's actions constituted ineffective assistance to counsel in violation of Ozzie's constitutional rights.
It seems to me that there are there were approximately 20 individuals whom Mr. Kratz contends had information that was important to his defense, but nowhere is it stated what that evidence would have uncovered or how it would have strengthened his case, particularly in light of the fact that he admitted to the police that he had bought these large quantities of cocaine.
Well, in some extent, that goes to the ineffectiveness of Mr. Fahrenkamp, that when he went to the court asking for the money for the investigation, he didn't bother to explain to the court in great detail who these witnesses were going to be. And that goes to the way that Mr. Fahrenkamp approached his case with not really taking an interest in it. The witnesses, one witness in particular was important in that this witness may have had impeaching information on Janice Doss. And Janice Doss was the most important government witness in this case, because Janice Doss was the only person who actually saw the alleged cocaine transactions occur. The government agent saw Janice Doss go into Mr. Kratz's house, saw Janice Doss come out, but only Janice Doss was there when the alleged cocaine was changing hands. So impeaching information on Janice Doss, which this witness could have provided, would have been of great importance. There was another witness who may have had impeaching information regarding some Florida criminal charges relating to another witness, and a number of other witnesses, which unfortunately we don't know a lot about because Mr. Fahrenkamp didn't bother to explain to the court what the significance of those witnesses was.
Now, his lawyer advised him to take the plea to one conspiracy count, dismiss the other seven, and oftentimes that's very good advice. What would have happened here if he would have contested the charges and been convicted on all eight of them? How would they have been grouped under the guidelines, or what would, you know, you're trying to analyze what the lawyer is telling this client to do in light of his admissions to the police, which seemed to be unreasonable advice.
Certainly, had he gone to trial and had had he gotten convicted on all of the charges against him, obviously there's potential for significant more prison time than he did get. However, he still got 120 months, which is not an insignificant amount of prison time. And had
so he does want to withdraw his guilty plea here and proceed to trial on all eight charges.
That's what he'd like to do. Obviously, under the advice of his new trial lawyer, once ideally he gets appointed a competent lawyer to appoint represent him at the trial.
You've talked to him and you've ascertained that he wants to withdraw his guilty plea here and
proceed
to trial, knowing what could possibly happen.
Well, his view is either proceed to trial, or the other possibility is once you have the investigation completed and you, to some extent, know what cards you're holding, you can go into the negotiations with the government again, but this time from a much stronger bargaining position. If you go into negotiations knowing that you have strong impeaching evidence on the key witness, then you could potentially either go to trial or bluff your way potentially to a stronger plea bargain agreement, depending on, you know, what the investigation turns up. Obviously, coming in negotiations with impeaching evidence, you would have leverage to get a better plea agreement if that was the choice that they ended up choosing. But certainly going to trial would be one option he would like to consider if it gets remanded for that. So I'm going to go on to the Strickland standard. The Strickland test encompasses two components, performance and prejudice, and I'll address both briefly. With regard to the first element, which is the performance element, Mr. Farrenkamp's performance was deficient because he failed to conduct any investigation of the 20 witnesses which were identified earlier. And it's important to note that Mr. Farrenkamp applied to the court for government funds to conduct this investigation, and that the court granted the application to use government money through the Criminal Justice Act to pay for this investigation. And under the statute, 18 U.S.C. 3006, government funds may be expended for the purposes of investigation only if the district court makes a finding that that investigation is, quote, necessary, unquote. So you have a finding by the district court that this investigation is necessary, and you have a representation of the court by Mr. Kratz, by Mr. Farrenkamp, that this investigation is necessary, that you need government funds to do it because Mr. Farrenkamp couldn't pay for it, and yet no investigation was conducted. The question is, why did that happen? And we argue that the likely rationale was that because, as Mr. Farrenkamp himself admitted, Ozzie had run out of money to pay for Mr. Farrenkamp's services, Mr. Farrenkamp had a strong financial incentive to get this case pled out as quickly as possible so that Mr. Farrenkamp could move on to a client who did have the ability to pay. The government was putting up some money for the investigation services, but not to pay Mr. Farrenkamp, because Mr. Farrenkamp was privately retained counsel. Moving on to the prejudice element, this court has held that in order to show prejudice, petitioner need only establish a reasonable probability that the result would have been different had counsel's error not occurred. And the government argued that Ozzie was not prejudiced because he would have been found guilty whether or not this investigation had been conducted. We argue that this argument by the government misses the point. Based on the results of the investigation, Ozzie might have decided to go to trial, or he might have decided to negotiate a more favorable plea agreement. Even if he would have still pleaded guilty, he would have come into the plea negotiations with a stronger bargaining position. And I can see that I'm into the time for my rebuttal, so I'll stop here.
Thank you. Mr. Liggins?
Good morning, Your Honors. My name is Tom Liggins, and I represented the government at most of the proceedings below, and I certainly represented the government during the plea negotiations in this case and the two hearings that are referenced in our brief. I believe Judge Evans asked a question which this court should keep foremost in its mind when deciding this case. The question of what would have happened if he would have contested the charges, I think, bears directly on the question of just how effective Farrenkamp was in this case. This defendant was arguably subject to an enhanced mandatory minimum sentence in this case had we filed the 851 enhancement. That would have doubled his sentence to 20 years instead of the 10 years that he received. That is a result that Mr. Farrenkamp bargained for, and it was a result that was very advantageous to his client when you consider the government's evidence against him. One of the assertions the counsel made this morning was the government's most important witness is Janice Goss. I disagree wholeheartedly with that. The government's most important witness was the police officer who took the defendant's two confessions to the conduct that charged in the indictment and in to the count that he pled guilty to, count one, conspiracy to distribute cocaine over a very long period of time. With all of that said, I just have a couple of more points to make. I don't believe the defendant has established in this case that there was a failure to investigate. The evidence he cites in support of that proposition is outside the record. I believe if this court were inclined to rule in his favor on that basis, it would require a remand for further factual development as to what Ferencamp did and why he did it. There is evidence in the record, however, that he did conduct an investigation and that he did represent his client zealously and that he did have a knowledge of the facts and the individuals who could offer evidence on his client's behalf. If you look at the sentencing slash suppression hearing in this case, you will see that Attorney Ferencamp called half a dozen witnesses on his client's behalf. If you look at the de novo detention hearing in this case, you will see that he called more than half a dozen witnesses on his client's behalf. From my experience, you don't put witnesses on the stand unless you first talk to them. So I think the fact that Ferencamp did not hire an investigator does not at all mean that he did not himself investigate this case well enough to realize that if he was cutting his client's criminal liability in half, that that was a deal that he should take. We are also hampered, as Judge Rovner pointed out, because we don't know what these witnesses would have said. We don't know if they're the same witnesses who Ferencamp called, and we don't know how, if at all, they could have overcome the overwhelming evidence that came from the defendant's own mouth in this case. Moving on to the second point I'd like to make, the petitioner also has to establish, as the second Strickland prong, that he suffered actual prejudice in this case from any failure to investigate. In the change of plea context, of course, that means he has to show that but for counsel's errors, he would have chosen to go to trial. He must come forward with more than just his self-serving declarations that he would have gone to trial. In the context of this case, it is abundantly clear to me anyway that this defendant would have been foolhardy to go to trial in the teeth of a potential 851 enhancement. He confessed twice to law enforcement officers. There was buy money found in his possession during the execution of the search warrant. There was drug paraphernalia and drug records found during that same search warrant. There was drug residue found inside of his house. And he fully admitted his guilt during the plea colloquy. So based upon all of that, I don't believe there is any basis that this court could find that this defendant would have or should have exercised his right to go to trial. And if there are no further questions, that's all I have. Thank you.
Thank you. Mr. Kiefer, how much time? You have 2 minutes, Mr. Kiefer.
With regard to the question of whether or not Ozzie would have decided to go to trial, obviously I'm not his trial counsel, nor am I likely to be his trial counsel that goes to trial, and that would of course be a strategic decision he and his lawyer would have to make. I would point out, however, in the prejudice context, that this court has held in the Glover case that even a minimal amount of additional time in prison can constitute prejudice under the prejudice prong of Strickland. And our argument is that even if this case still would have reached a plea agreement, Ozzie could have gotten a better plea agreement if he had gone into those negotiations armed with the impeaching information. The government seems to argue that because Mr. Ferencamp called several witnesses at the suppression hearing, that shows that he, in fact, was a diligent lawyer. And I think the record that Mr. Ferencamp has established before this court showed just the opposite. He was on Ozzie's direct appeal. He was removed from representing Ozzie because he failed to file various papers with this court. This court removed him from the appeal and appointed new counsel. Soon thereafter, in two other different cases, he was in fact disbarred from appearing before the Seventh Circuit due to abandoning two other clients. So Mr. Fahrenkamp is someone who has a history of a bad actor in terms of abandoning his clients and not being a diligent lawyer. Finally, we point out that Mr. Kratz's petition was not perfect. He filed it while he was in prison. He filed it pro se, and for that reason, if the court chooses not to grant the habeas petition outright, we would ask that you consider remanding it to the district court for a evidentiary hearing. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Kiefer, and you have the appreciation of the court for accepting this appointment.
Yes, sir.
Thank you.